The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for returning to the show. This is, of course, Mike Corbell, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm thankful for the listeners, both old and new, and thankful to be alive, healthy, and vibrant. On my last episode, I shared a little vision for what this podcast will be going forward, and I'm grateful for those who listened to my solo episode. Hopefully, you found some value in it, and based on a few comments I received, I will be continuing that format in the future. So my plan is to release two episodes a week. One short episode with whatever happens to be on my mind that day or surrounding days that I record in, and then, of course, a longer interview-style episode, which I'll release every Sunday night for you to hear on Mondays. With that being said, please hit me up if you want to be featured on a podcast. Now, I won't just interview anyone, but if I think you have an interesting story or can demonstrate value for the listeners, then let's keep the conversation going. Feel free to reach out to me via Twitter at The Invictus Mind. Okay, so today's episode is a replay of another show I was featured on. Tommy Selmans of the Year Zero podcast has been making a name for himself, and he is growing bigger and bigger and has been having some great, interesting guests and great discussions on his podcast. Tommy's a guy I respect because he's one of the people who shows his curiosity, his ability to look at the big picture, and is definitely someone who seems to be able to ask the right questions. For the last several months, there has been a trend in podcast circles that I listen to, and some of that, of course, is seeping over into the Twitter sphere, and it's really exciting to me. You've probably guessed by now that I love talking about philosophy and religion, and though I am no expert in any of these areas, I do think the conversation is relevant to the times we live in. There is a movement happening, and people are discovering the mystical nature of life, and because of that, topics such as spirituality, mysticism, and even Christianity have been brought to the forefront. In this episode, Tommy let me into his conversation, and we discussed some of the ideas I have and felt the need to share. All right, but before we get into that, I do want to pitch the network I've been very happy to be part of. For people who are looking to prepare themselves for an uncertain future, to have a place to network with like-minded individuals, as well as learn new skills such as marketing, branding, and digital entrepreneurship, the Nomad Network is the place to hang out. It's not just another social media site, but it's rather a digital community with positive, helpful, and what I call go-getter types of people who share their stories of their progressions into becoming self-sufficient. There you'll find artists, podcasters, web developers, and people who want to truly find freedom in their lives by taking action and not simply complaining about the state of the world. It's a free network to join, and of course, there is a premium membership should you want to dive into deeper into gaining skills that you need to take the next step. Once again, that's the Nomad Network, and you can find it by going to my.nomadnetwork.app. Just so you know, no one is paying me to talk about it. I just find it a refreshing place to hang out with online, and I've made several friends because of it. Okay, then, with that being said, and without any further ado, here's my conversation as a guest on the Year Zero podcast. Enjoy it.
So, yeah, you reached out to me after my podcast with Pete about culture, the importance of culture, and you've been kind of paying attention to some of the conversations that we've all been having surrounding the more mystical and mythological side of culture, which I'm about to release an episode. I'm doing it tonight. I'm going to do it. It's going to come out. It'll be out tomorrow with Matt Erickson and my buddy Coop. And my buddy Coop, he's just a fucking, he's brilliant. And it's a shame that nobody knows about him. And I was introduced to him by another good friend of mine, Gord, who's another trucker. And the guy's just exceptionally well read. I mean, he's one of those. He's kind of like, I don't know if you know who Ace Harkus is on Twitter.
I'm familiar with the handle. I don't know him personally, or I've never talked to him.
Yeah, he's it's one of those situations where when he starts like saying things and he's quoting like books that you've never heard of, you're like, oh my god, how did you ever find the time to read all this? Like, I don't know where you found, like, I like to consider myself fairly well read, but I mean, this dude like blows me away. Like I would say he's a genius as far as like IQ level. And so the things that he absorbs and the way he comes across, it really blows my mind. And so I always enjoy the conversations with him because it really expands me and stretches my ability to have these conversations. And so you're coming from more of a Christian like personality, right? Whereas I consider myself more agnostic. I don't even know what Pete would consider himself. I've never asked him. I know he went to seminary, you know, and he studied, you know, a lot of the scriptures very in depth. Matt is, he flirts with Christianity, you know, and he's admitted that he's fallen away from it at times and kind of like, I'm not sure like if this is really necessary. But and then Coop is, I wouldn't call Coop a Christian either. He has a concept which I find really interesting, that God is reality. So like objective reality that you deal with on a regular basis, whether it's the present or the future, moving forward, that is what God is. So the God is the reaction to your action, basically, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and so as you reap what you sow kind of, you know, mentality. And so I appreciate that line of thought. And when he, the first time he ever said to me, God is reality, I was like, oh Jesus fucking Christ, man. How do I even like talk about that? Like, how do I even address that? You know, that's such a big statement, you know, in and of itself. So, but you're coming from very much a Christian perspective. I would venture to say Protestant. Is that fair?
Well, I'm Mormon. It doesn't really fall under Protestant.
Okay. I didn't know you were a different Mormon. Religion. Okay.
Right. And so I don't talk about my religion a lot, but on my podcast, I do claim to have some access or some ideas about spiritual freedom. And my conversion story, I became a Latter-day Saint back in 2003. So it's been a number of years now. And so I'm very well read in those scriptures. And there are going to be people listening within an earshot here that'll say that Mormons and Christians are not the same thing. I'm not here to have that kind of discussion at all. I mean, I do read the Old Testament and the New Testament. I am pretty well versed in those books, as well as the Book of Mormon, which is the scriptures from our faith.
Right.
But I've just been really fascinated lately because I believe I found libertarianism within my own readings of Christianity. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself a Christian anarchist, although sometimes I do in some circles. But I believe within the ideology of libertarianism is Christian underpinnings. And so when I started hearing people like Vin Armani and Matthew Erickson and some other people starting realizing that we're moving into a mystical age, it really caught my attention. It made me feel kind of warm in my heart that a lot of libertarians are now embracing this thought process. Not to say that everyone's going to become a Christian, or I have a desire that everyone be a Christian, but I it does resonate strong with me, and I really like the idea.
So, okay, so kind of like here's kind of like my framing of what I see in the biblical context, and then because you're starting off like right out the gates with its foundation in liberty, or liberty foundation in Christianity. And what was it? Wasn't it James Monroe who said, in order for a people to be free, they must be virtuous, or something along those lines. I know I'm jacking up the quote, but it was something along those lines. That it would take a virtuous people to remain free.
Well, I believe that was the thought process of the founding fathers, whether that can be attributed to James Monroe or otherwise. Not everyone who was a founding father was a quote-unquote Christian. There were many who were deists who believed right. in a higher authority, but didn't necessarily believe the tenets of the Bible. But I think that a basis of morality or virtuousness, as you said, probably is a strong tenet to Christianity and to libertarianism.
Yeah, well, and it was Nietzsche who said that, like, to adopt the Christian morality without the Christian God is, it's counterproductive. That you would eventually, like, without the God, without that central authority to focus on and everybody move towards, that the Christian morality is useless to some extent. And I think he was onto something there, and maybe I'm fucking up what he meant with the quote, but it really felt like that's what he was kind of saying, that the morality that is derived in the West, especially from the Christian doctrine, and it will lose its sentiment and be used in nefarious ways when you separate the deity or the divinity from that morality. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess that's kind of how I read it and understand what he's saying. There's been so many different readings of Nietzsche that I would, you know, say that I could be just as wrong as everybody else whenever it comes to, you know, like some of these guys that we're reading and that we're trying to figure out and that we're trying to put together, like I've been on a kick of reading, you know, Carl Jung, and I've been listening. I've been going back and re-listening to a lot of the old Jordan Peterson lectures with my wife, because she'll bring a different perspective to it, because I've listened to like his Maps of Meaning lecture series, especially, always like gripped me, and I listened to it like several times a few years ago. I want to say in like 2019, I listened to it probably like two or three different times, that entire series. And so my wife and I are both listening to it together now in the evenings, and we're talking about it, and she brings a different perspective, you know, from a female perspective. She's hearing different things. She's asking questions that maybe I didn't think to ask whenever I first listened to it. And so I'm looking at it from a different point of view, and she's an atheist, but she's interested in the Jordan Peterson biblical lectures because she was raised apostolic church. I think that's how you say it.
Apostolic. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I always like want to relate it to apostle lick, you know, I don't know. So that's like her, you know, faith whenever she was growing up in South Africa. And I think, you know, you mentioned the Lord of Spirits earlier. I don't remember if that was before or after we started recording, but, you know, listening to the Orthodox, the Greek tradition and that early tradition, you know, from when the church was first founded, that's really interesting too, because then you're kind of getting, you're kind of seeing how the stories kind of manifested themselves, right? And came together. And so all these things leading up to modern day, and I'm stumbling all over myself because I'm trying to like really form how I'm trying to picture this. And I think in pictures, and I have to interpret these pictures and into words, and sometimes it's really difficult, which is why I stumble all over the place on my podcast all the time. It's one of those things where it's like the evolution of this thought process to modern times. It created like the wealthiest nation in the world, the freest nation in the world, that became one of the most devastating and destructive nations in the world. And it's really an interesting thing that if you can return culture to its previous stance and traditions, that you can recreate the freest nation in the world, I think, is kind of the way I'm looking at it. And so it's almost like a conservative kind of argument in an odd way. Mm-hmm. But it's looking at the archetypical structure of the nation and how the nation was structured and what archetype that nation was trying to manifest and what that nation has become and how it evolved from that archetype into this tyranny.
You know, if you listen to Thaddeus Russell at all, he'll tell you, he has his whole renegade history of the United States. Uh-huh. And I listened to another podcaster by the name of Brian McClanahan, who tells a lot about the founding fathers. And of course, my brother, who has been on my podcast and yours a few times, is very well read in history.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can say that there is an archetypal history or culture of America. I think there's a presumed one, but there's not one set one.
Yeah, no, I don't think there was an archetypal history. I think there was an archetype that manifested itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That Jung talks about the collective subconscious, and it's something I've really been struggling with. And what he's saying, and this is kind of like what I draw the idea of God came from, was this collective subconscious. So it's kind of a mystery to someone of my education level why a movie like Superman would not only be a best-selling movie in America, but also a best-selling movie in China. Like, what do the cultures have in common? They have nothing in common culturally, but the archetypes are the same, right? We all envision the same archetypes, and we all draw different things out of these archetypes, right? And this is why, like, Christianity, like, spread across the globe, like, the way it did. You know, one of the stories, I think it was in Matthew, that they're talking about, the governor of the Roman governor kicking in the doors of the temple and barging through the temple into the very back section of the holiest of holies in the back and going through the curtain and realizing there's nothing there. They're not like, you know, the high priest was the only one who could go there and there's nothing there. And he came to the conclusion that Christianity was a religion within your head. And that's what, like, attracted Romans to this Christian structure, that it was all psychological, and that it was that it attached itself to you, your psyche, and it wasn't an idol or some, you know, actual structure that you were worshiping. It was something within you that you were worshiping. And so that is kind of what brought Romans into the faith. Whereas I'm sure the Native Americans weren't drawn in by that at all whenever they started joining Christianity. I'm sure it had something to do with nature and, you know, like the creation of, you know, they had the Great Spirit in their ancient traditions. And so they felt like they were getting like an inside view of what that Great Spirit actually was, right? And the creator of all this nature and all this wonder around them. And so I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, but they're all attracted to the same archetype for different reasons. Like, so what are these reasons? And what is this collective subconscious? And so it's either an evolutionary trait or it's actually God. It just depends on how you look at it. It could possibly be both, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that possibility as well, you know? And so when you look at this and you're looking at like how the culture came to be, it came out of this archetype. It it manifested itself out of this archetype, and people like the founding fathers trying to put into words what this archetype was and how this archetype would have a society act, you know, in more of a Western sense. I mean, it's not like the Torah where you have like the Ten Commandments that, you know, are there to monitor everything. And that's the law. And you don't, that's how you follow the law. And you never say Yahweh, because if you say Yahweh, you're bound to eventually take Yahweh in vain. And you know, that type of deal. Like, so like this, you had kind of this Western idealization of the exact same archetype. I'm sorry. This freaking dog, man. But you had this like kind of Western like idealization of this, the exact same archetype. And it's like that collective subconscious where everyone is attracted to the exact same archetype is quite the mystery. That's quite a big feat to undertake, right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to unravel some of the things you said there. I was introduced to a book I just started reading. It's by the author's name is Tom Holland. It's called Dominion. And basically it's the story of how the Christian religion has taken over the entire planet. And the theme of the book is all of Western philosophy, from capitalism to socialism, communism, even a woke culture today, is embedded in this root. Maybe that's the archetype you're talking about, this root of Christianity. But to answer your question about, like, you know, the Romans, when they came into Jerusalem originally, I had just literally read that chapter before you came in. So I understand what you're talking about here. One thing that I think is lost in most modern American Christians is that Christianity is deeply spiritual, deeply mystical. Okay. A lot of your Puritans, ever since the Enlightenment period, they've taken a lot of that mysticism out of there. I mean, they have the story of Jesus there. They have the story of the crucifixion and everything like that. But they're forgetting in scriptures that it signifies gods. And I say that with lowercase g and a plural, multiple gods. And it also talks about this on the Lord of Spirits podcast, which you referenced.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to Jesus Christ, every culture in the world, they were led by rulers, by emperors, right? By dictators who were driven by conquest, from Alexander the Great to King Xerxes. You've seen the movie 300, right? The Pharaoh himself. So they were all powerful, they're almighty, and they decreed the laws. And so in their eyes, these were gods, right? And so when the Romans came into Jerusalem and they said, there's no God in this temple, they didn't understand. They said, these people believe in a story, but there's no person there. There's no leader. There's no conqueror. It's just they believe this. Well, the Jews at the time, they believed that God, known as the King of Kings, dictated the law to Moses, the Ten Right. Commandments. He was the one that created the law for the Jews to follow. So they didn't need a dictator. They didn't need an emperor to lay down the law. And so it was a little confusing at the time, because it was a sense of maybe paganism or a spiritualism ascribed to all these, you know, the Roman emperor who was a god at the time. But they didn't understand why is there no figure here? Why is there no central authority here to be God? Well, if you look at Orthodox Christianity, my understanding of it, and, you know, Catholicism kind of sprang from that as well, they go into much greater depth about the spiritual nature of how things are, about angels and about demons and sources of energy that are basically in the world, even though they're not necessarily physically there.
Mm.
And so I think a lot of that is lost, and Christianity has a lot more mysticism in it than people think. And I think that's probably why the confusion, even during our founding years of this country, they had kind of lost track of that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that was one of the things that Vin was talking about with Pete so much last year, was this return to the mystical and we see this around us, you know, whether it's the whether it's the critical race theorist or you know the what you call it the COVID cult or whatever you want to call them, and that you know they have their I mentioned it earlier before we started recording that you know these people that are so deathly afraid of COVID, they have to have their talisman around, you know, on over their face, you know, they have to have this mark, you know, so to speak. And it's very much like a fear of God kind of fear that they bring into this. They're just at awe. But yeah, so they have this this like almost like fear of God, you know, the way that they view like COVID. And it's like that has become their religion in such a way. And it's like, okay, like I'm not down with the critical race theorist. I'm not down with wokeism. I'm not down with this whole COVID tyranny that we're experiencing. And I've met very, well, I can't say it that way. That's not the right way to say it. If I wanted to structure a society with people in such a way that I felt like we could live in harmony and actually coexist together in a way that was productive, it would be with Christians in very many instances, you know. And I think to my family, you know, they're very, very much Christian in their faith and almost like Western fundamentalists in certain ways, but I could stand to live with them. You know, I could stand to create a society with them. Whereas I don't see these other people as people I could create a society with. And so it's like, if I find this society tolerable, it must have to do with something, maybe my familiarity with it, my comfort with it, already being around it my entire life. Maybe that's all it is. But as much as Christians get dogged for being judgmental, which there are those, the majority of Christians aren't like that. Like in reality, they're not judgmental people in reality. And so these are productive, hardworking people that have faith in something that I don't understand, that I could exist within the parameters of and not be threatened, you know, with death, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, you know, because they believe ultimately that if you are to die, it's not up to them, that it's up to their God to carry out the sentence. And that's, you know, that's for him to decide. Whereas these COVIDians, man, I get the feeling that these people would kill me in a heartbeat if they had the chance, you know? And so it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, so if I can see myself being able to conform within the parameters of this type of society, what is it about that type of society that is attractive to me? And that's kind of where I'm exploring at the moment. I'm really like trying to bog this down. You know, I went through my little bitterness, like, oh, I hate everything that has anything to do with God, for, you know, a few months to coming to the understanding that I don't have all the answers, and there's no way that with my minimal knowledge and the use of what 10% of my brain that is allotted to me, that I will ever be able to conceptualize or wrap my mind around anything as big as that idea. And so like, that's kind of why I lean more to the agnostic. I see that there is a type of wonder and a type of spirituality in nature, in the universe, in the cosmos, that I respect and I admire, but I also can't understand or can't wrap my mind around what it is that could have created such wondrous things and that I would never be able to tell you with certainty that I have the answer for you. That's kind of where my agnosticism comes from.
Yeah, you know, another book recommendation here is The Righteous Mind. It's actually, the subtitle is called Why Are Good People Divided Among Politics and Religion? And the author is Jonathan Haidt. He's a psychiatrist or psychologist. And he talks about where morality comes from. And the author, from what my understanding was, that he was very much like an atheist liberal before he started doing the research for this book. And so he traced cultures from all around the world and came up with why certain people have certain kinds of moral compasses. You know, where do they come from historically? And he talks about how people on the left have certain moral structures and people have on the right have different moral structures. Both can be good, but there's certain parts that are missing. He likens it to like taste buds. Like, you know, they say scientists say that we have so many taste receptors on our tongue, and certain cultures make certain kind of foods, but then when they get introduced to, like, for example, sugars and sweets, like, they're not accustomed to that kind of thing. So they had no idea that those foods existed. Well, when he talks about morality, he talks about there's six taste receptors where people come from. And if I can recall them from the top of memory, one is care or harm, right? Most people think it's not okay to harm other people or to harm animals, right? And so there's one that is about equity, you know, fairness, having some kind of justice in the world. And there's a taste receptor that talks about like loyalty to a group or loyalty to a hierarchy. And then there's a taste receptor for sanctity, which is more of a religious background. And so what this book talks about is how people on the left will only be able to taste, I'm using that word as it were related to a tongue. They only realize that there's three different places that they get the morality from, where people on the right will actually have all six of them that they're using. It's really interesting because, you know, people on the left, they want things to be just. They want things to be fair. They want, they have a basic sense of morality for oppression, you know, against tyranny, for the little guy.
Mm.
But then again, people on the right, you know, they have this idea of a hierarchical nature, right? Of order, of loyalty to one's country, which is why you'll see conservatives who are waving a flag and who love the Constitution and, you know, who support the troops because, you know, they belong to a group that they believe is higher than themselves. That all comes back down to basic Christian theology. The story of Jesus Christ comes from humble beginnings, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was the son of a carpenter. He was born in Jerusalem in the most humble of circumstances. He wasn't a conqueror. So his whole mission was that of the little guy, you know, he was the oppressed. And so although as the King of Kings is described in scripture, right? A lot of the people on the right, your so-called religious conservatives, will talk about, the order of nations, how things have evolved that way. And then people on the left, they see the oppressed. You know, we want to take care of the little guy. And it's really interesting. Are you familiar with David Gornatsky at all?
I know the name, but I can't tell you who.
Yeah, so he has a whole, his radio station, he all talks about mimetic theory and how, you know, people want to place the blame of civilization onto a scapegoat, right? So what they used to do when they sacrificed animals is they would basically say all the sins that are afflicting this nation right now, we're going to place on this goat, the goat of Azazel, and they would march him off the cliff, right? And he was a scapegoat.
Right.
And sometimes they did that with people. They blame certain cultures or certain people who didn't follow their customs or orders onto that person, and they would sacrifice that person. That's what they did in the ancient world. And Jesus Christ said, you know, I am the last scapegoat. He didn't really say that, but that was the role he played, right? All the sins of the world are on me. I'm going to sacrifice myself. So it done away with that. But humanity still wants to place blame, still wants to have a scapegoat. They want to blame somebody. So, you know, whether you're on the left or you're on the right, that's the basis of the Christian story that I'm talking about. You know, people want to, they want to have something to blame. They want to have something to say, okay, you know, there's something wrong in our society. Whose fault is it? Who do we blame? What do we do for that? But they want to think about the little individual, the little guy, right? Because, you know, that's it. I mean, that's the whole basis of the Christian story. And most people's morality is derived from bits and pieces of that.
Yeah, no, that's actually interesting because, like, if you really like dig down into like what people are saying when they're looking for somebody to blame for all the problems, is they're saying, I am the God of my life and I have the right to judge, right? And so it is my judgment. In my judgment, I determine that this is the sacrifice that is needed for, you know, the sins of the world or whatever sins have afflicted me, right? And so you have all these little gods, you know, fighting amongst themselves in the realm of politics or culture or whatever, that are trying to sacrifice or find the proper sacrifice to rid the world of what they perceive as evil.
Mm-hmm. I think within ourselves, every single person, personally, I believe, because I am religious, I believe that we come from deity. We are offspring of deity. And I think inherent in our psyche is this attraction to a higher power, even if we don't come out and say it. And, you know, you talked about Nietzsche. Nietzsche was quoted for saying, God is dead and we have killed him, right?
Right.
Basically, what he's saying is that every single person inherently, internally, they recognize that there's this higher power. And Nietzsche recognized that even in his time, that people were transforming their thought process and replacing a God to their own understanding. Like they became God themselves, right? Mm. They're making God in the image of man instead of what the scriptures say, that man was created in the image of God. So it's kind of a flip-flop of the whole story.
Mm. Yeah. And which is a pagan ideal, right? That's a traditional pagan ideal, is to create God in the image of man, which is why they would form idols that look like man, or they would, you know, they would draw Zeus with the big, you know, white beard and all muscular, but he looked like a man, you know, he didn't look like anything other than a warrior, really, is what he looked like. So yeah, there is that pagan ideal, and it's carried over into Western tradition in such a way. I'm actually reading a book right now that's really interesting. My buddy Coop told me about, called The Two Babylons. And it's going, it was written in like 1901 by a priest. And, he's laying out how the pagan traditions like infiltrated the Catholic Church, and how much of the Catholic traditions are based off of paganism. Mm-hmm. And that it was that the development of the Catholic Church in such a way was walking away from the traditions that created Christianity, right? That what they did, let's just say, like, he talks specifically, I've only read a couple of chapters, so I'm not like really deep into it and don't have all his arguments down. But one of the things he lays out very early on is confession. Okay. So he talks about whenever Jesus talks about confessing your sins one to another, right? And that the Catholic Church manifested itself in such a way where the congregation confesses their sins and their wrongdoings that may have hurt the church to the church, the preachers or the bishops, the priests, whatever. But the priests and the bishops and those in the hierarchical structure never confess to the congregation how they have wronged the congregation. And he said that this, and what he's saying is, this was a pagan idea. This was not a Christian idea. The Christian idea was that the hierarchy was accountable to the masses, and that the masses were accountable to each other, right? Including accountable to the hierarchy, because you're all part of the church, like, basically is what he's saying. And so that as each individual piece of the church sins against the targets or direction of the church, that it is up to those, each individual, whether it be the Pope or the bishop or the priest or just Joe Blow sitting in the pews, that all of them have a responsibility to be accountable to each other, right? That's kind of like the idea of how the United States is supposed to have been structured, you know, with the three forms of government, Democratic Republic, you know, kind of idea, where the government is accountable to the people are accountable to the government, everybody's accountable to each other, you know, kind of that kind of structure. So I can kind of see, but what he was saying was that what happened was in pagan times, I think he mentioned Macedonia in particular, where the high priest of the pagan gods, it wasn't Marduk. I can't remember which one it was. I'd have to grab the book, but it's not important exactly who it was he was talking about. It's just the idea of what he's talking about that struck me as interesting. So like the pagan god that the people were worshipped was represented by the high priest, and all the people were accountable to the high priest, and the high priest was only accountable to that pagan idol. Well, that pagan idol was speaking through the high priest, so therefore the high priest was never in the wrong and never had to confess their sins to the congregation. And so the congregation was accountable to the high priest, but the high priest was accountable to nobody, because the high priest was a mouthpiece for the pagan god. And that the Catholic Church mimicked that idea and embodied that idea and got rid of the idea that the hierarchy is accountable to the congregation itself. And so I look at some of the traditions of the Christian structure and the religions, you know, that are here in the West, especially that we consider Christianity. And I see that a lot. I see kind of like the pagan ideal everywhere, but I don't see this sacrificial idea of sacrificing yourself for the betterment. You know, one of the things that Jordan Peterson constantly harps on was Solzhenitsyn said that you are responsible and accountable for all the sins of all of men all across time, period. And so that's a really deep thought, right? Because, you know, Solzhenitsyn wrote The Gulag Archipelago. So I was telling my wife the other day, it's one of those books I really want to dig into. I know what it is. I know what it's about. I haven't read it yet because I don't know if I have 2,100 pages in me at this point in time. I'm just not sure that's what I'm at that point yet. And I'll read it when I'm ready to read it. You know what I'm saying? But I think what Solzhenitsyn was saying was that if you focus on yourself and you focus on bettering yourself, then those people around you will see that you're better and they'll make them want to be better. And then the people around them will see that they're better and it'll make them want to be better. And so it'll grow like exponentially, you know. And it's kind of like that whole idea of pay it forward. You know, they had that movie come out about and all that. It's kind of like that idea where like it's one person. If one person passes along good deed to two other people and those two other people pass along a good deed to two other people and those two people, you know, and it just and it just keeps like growing exponentially, then the whole world will be a better place because everybody will be sacrificing of themselves. And we don't live in a time at this moment that people are willing to sacrifice of themselves. And that is something that I became acutely aware of in my own psyche a few years back, and that I've worked very diligently to correct in within myself, and to be willing to sacrifice of myself, of my time, of my money, whatever it is. I feel like I'm a better person, or I wouldn't even say I'm a better person. I feel like I feel better about myself as a person since I made that conscious decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the golden rule people know about, you know, do unto others as you want to have, you know, done unto you.
Right.
That's like a karmic law. You know, karma is along the same process, right? Pay it forward, you know, treat people well. I mean, that comes right out of the Beatitudes that were taught by Jesus, you know, on a Sermon on the Mount in the New Testament. And so, you know, no matter where these beliefs come from, they all, personally, I believe they all come from one source. You know, you mentioned paganism and things of that nature. And I read a book by Joseph Campbell was his name. It was basically called the Hero's Journey. Mm. Right. And his concept is about all these ideas, all these stories, all these mythologies from all over the world. They have similarities in their storyline, right? Mm-hmm. There's this hero, right? And he's right. Got to go on a mission. He's get oppressed and everything like that. Even in Christianity, you see the same pattern. You can see the same pattern in the Bible as you can. Now, Joseph Campbell wrote this book before the Marvel movies came out, but you can see the same pattern in Iron Man, right? You can see the same pattern. So, like, there's this hero's journey that's going on through all of mythology, and there are essential tenets within us. You know, those are the archetypes that Jung might talk about, right?
Right.
So, wherever they come from a single source.
Mm. Yes. And this is that collective subconscious that I was talking about earlier, that I'm like, no matter what you think about it, it's a very strange idea, right? It's more than you're able to conceptualize. Mm-hmm. Just the idea, like if you think about the amount of people in the world right now, like 7 billion people, and you identify that each one of those people identifies a specific journey as being the hero's journey. And it's the same for all of them. And where did that come from? Because they don't all share the same culture. You see what I'm saying? So you can't say it's a cultural phenomenon. What is that phenomenon? And if that phenomenon is like a touch of divinity, a touch of God, just that small portion of that touch is enough to make you like to linger within your mind for years to mm-hmm. like, cause you'll never be able to understand that. You'll never be able to interview all 7 billion people and learn where did this come from, right? You can't go back in time and do psychological tests on, you know, Moses, let's say, you know, like you can't,
right.
You're trying to figure out these things and it's like, okay. and so, yeah, it's very difficult. And I've been playing with an idea that Coop pretty much shut me down on it, but it's something that I'm still kind of thinking of, and I'll run it by you here in a minute, but I want to let you finish what you were saying because I did interrupt you.
Well, kind of going after what you're saying, you know, we all have this idea. This is where my faith will inform me. In scriptures, it talks about faith being like a grain of mustard. Mm. Okay, I don't know if you've ever seen a mustard tree or not, but it's a big tree.
Right.
But a mustard seed is very, very tiny. Mm. Right. And so my faith informs me that the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit, is the revealer of all truth. Mm. And what I've been taught in my religion was, if I'm going to exercise just a particle of faith, okay, be that one concept, right, that you're talking about, that small idea of truth, okay, I don't know the whole history of the world. I don't know what all the thousands of religions actually teach, but I'm going to exercise this one little, just one little truth, this little grain of mustard seed. And I'm gonna add to it. I'm gonna nurture it. I'm gonna cultivate it. I'm gonna let it grow. And as it grows, my faith will increase. My understanding will increase. My knowledge will increase. Miraculously, things will come my way that make more sense. And that's really how faith works, you know. So mm-hmm. I think you can probably start from anywhere, but you know, there's only so far that logic and reason will take us, right? That's where God comes in and intervenes. Like where my logic ends, my faith has to take over.
Right.
And so faith just has to be exercised, right? Line upon line, precept upon precept, as they teach in our church. It's like, okay, well, God, if I don't have all the faith or I don't have all the knowledge, then, you know, can you make up the difference for me? And I think mm-hmm. that's what carries a lot of Christians forward, is they don't have all the knowledge. I mean, I don't know any Christian that proclaims to know everything, but they know enough to live a good life, and they exercise that faith, and they try to live by the principles that they're taught. And everybody falls short, Tommy. We're all going to sin, right? And that's why this—that's why the story of the Redeemer comes into play. Hey, where we fall short, Christ comes in and replace and takes over and fulfills that missing part.
Right. Well, and this works for every aspect of your life, like not just in a religious aspect. And this is something that I've been really focusing on, trying to determine in my own life, because like when you make a decision, like when you decide to do something, right? You you come up with reason and you're trying to speak logically to yourself, but ultimately you're taking a step of faith, doing something out of the known. Like if you're doing something that you're not familiar with, there is an amount of faith because you don't know all the obstacles that could pop up in your way. Right. So when you're like, let's say you're a 21, 22 year old boy, you know, who's taking his first step out of his parents' house, right? Like how you decide to go forward from your parents' home to the outside world, like those are steps of faith, because you don't know what's coming at you. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. And so like if you decide immediately to move in with a girlfriend, or you decide to go live with a roommate, and all these things, you're entering these contracts on faith, like whatever you're doing, it on the faith that the best case scenario will come out of this, you know, contract that you are entering into. And so I always had trouble with the idea of faith. Like I always did, because I never understood it until I could start actionably watching it in my life. Right now, I haven't figured out how that it interacts with my spirituality, because I don't consider myself ultra spiritual. I just never have. That's just not the, I live in a dream, so to speak. I fantasize a lot. I write, you know, fiction. And I guess that's something spiritual about that, but it's not, I don't find it to be religious or divine. I find it a lot of times to be cathartic. I think would be the way I would describe it, because a lot of times I'm expressing deep, like dark portions of my psyche that all of us have, that none of us ever talk about. Right. And I'm doing it in such a way that is artistic and beautiful and poetic in a lot of ways. But I would never, I don't think these are things that I would even be able to, if I wanted to talk about like where these stories come from, where these ideas come from, I don't think I would even be able to articulate like where it's coming from. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to kind of blow your mind. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how to explain this in a way that makes sense, because internally I understand it, but it's hard for me to verbalize it. Jordan Peterson talks about this a little bit, but I think the idea came more fully listening to the Lord of Spirits podcast. So the word inspiration, okay, to be inspired means that something, a spirit, inspiration, a spirit actually affected that thought.
Right.
So Jordan Peterson teaches that thoughts are not conceived on your own.
Yep.
They come to you.
That whole show with LB Moonies where we talked about this, where are these thoughts coming from?
Right. So what the Orthodox, these two priests and the Lord of Spirits will say is that there are influences in the world for good and for bad.
Right.
So good spirits and bad spirits, and that which is good comes from God, and that which is not good comes from somewhere else. Right. And they plant thoughts into our head. Right. Which gives us control of being able to nurture those thoughts, right? That's that grain of mustard seed thing again, you know? So if a thought comes in your head, you can either immediately expel it or you can dwell on it and nurture it and grow. And that'll kind of take you down the path one or the other. So it's not something that we conceive of ourselves. If we conceived of our own thoughts, then every single one of us would just be going the wrong direction, right? But there's different influences in the world, which I think is really interesting to me, because it means that I have power to go after whatever I want, you know?
Right.
That's why I know that as I continue to associate with good people, as I continue to read good books, as I continue to nurture that goodness, then those thoughts can grow. And the bad thoughts that will and do come into my mind, I can just expel them and, you know, I won't go down the bad path.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think the way that they had put it on Lord of Spirits, which was pretty intense, and I kind of talked to my wife about this a little bit because I found it to be so interesting, but they were saying traditionally, the word angel means messenger, right? Mm-hmm. And what are thoughts other than messages, right? And they're messages from outside. And I actually was thinking about this, and I was like, wait, this adds on to Stephen Kinsella's argument that IP is a bunch of bullshit, right? Because no thought is uniformly your own. You're extracting data from other places that you didn't create in order to create your own thoughts, in order to create your own inventions. And if you look at every invention, in all actuality, all it is a boost of a previous invention. It's not an original invention. Mm-hmm. It's doing is amplifying or improving a prior invention, right? So like, so let's take the printing press, for example. Well, I mean, that just improved the way that books were written. So instead of monks sitting there writing by hand, you know, for hours a day, years of their life, you could just start spitting out newspapers, you know, or the internet, instead of having to wait to interact with somebody either via letter, you could send them an email, you know, so you didn't have to do the snail mail route. Right. Things like that. Instead of going to a library, you can look it up on Google, you know, things like that. All you're doing is expanding or improving upon already existing, you know, industrialization that was already there. And it's just an improvement. It's always just improvements, you know, moving forward. Now it's accelerated as technology's accelerated. The improvements are accelerating at a faster rate. So you might see something that you're completely unaware of, but if you trace it back and what it does, you can find out, oh, like back in, you know, the Stone Age, they were doing this instead of this. They were carving on rock wall instead of, writing on paper or, you know, printing on paper, you know? So it's just like, it was one of those things that like really struck me as interesting that the thoughts are never exclusively your own. What they are they're pieces of information that you've taken in. Now, where you get that information, like, you know, if you want to believe that some information only comes together because so many of us are given the same information and don't come to the same conclusions, you know? So like where these conclusions come from, where these creations come from, if there's a spark of divinity in, you know, in something that somebody creates, well, then that's another story altogether. But the thoughts, the information did not originate in you. It originated at other sources. It came into you and you put it together. You put together several bits of information to create, you know, a more improved model of what it was that you had seen prior to your existence, right?
Well, sure. And since there's an infinite number of ideas out there, right, the outside influences of people who we associate with will direct us towards whatever truth we want to discover, right? That's this whole postmodern idea of, you know, your truth, my truth. And I don't really believe that. I kind of reject that. I believe there is a source of all truth. But I do believe that because we are led individually by different ideas, that we can, you know, go down certain paths. And that's why we have to always revert back to, okay, I've gotten off the path. Now, how do I get back on the path again?
Right.
You know, I think that's the role that religion has, right? In my faith, Tommy, that we believe that we were put here with a veil over our eyes. In other words, we came from a place where we knew God was. We were part of a plan to say, hey, we're going to go down to the world and we're going to be basically wiped clean. And God's going to leave us clues. He's going to leave us prophets. He's going to lead us scriptures. He's going to leave us, like, you know, good spirits that'll help us direct the path back to him. Because ultimately, that's how we get to become, well, again, this might be against most Christian thought, but in my faith, we get to become like God himself. Mm. We're led to the same place where he was. It's just a path that we have to draw on. But we're done because we have a veil placed over our eyes, you know. So that was a challenge, and we all accepted it.
Is that kind of like, I don't want to like derail too far into like what your faith is, and because I've never really looked into Mormonism, but is that kind of the idea that they talk about on Lord of Spirits, like of theosis? Is that what you're kind of trying to say?
Right. Okay. Right. So in a Mormon theology, we call it exaltation.
Okay.
Okay. And without going too far down the path, the purpose of God is to make men glorified as he is. Right, to share everything that Christ has and that God has. And so we believe that we are literally deities in utero, right? That we have to become ultimately that way. Now, we're never going to achieve that in this world, but we need to, you know, we need to follow this path, and wherever we fall short is where Christ comes and makes up the difference. That's a pretty deep religious topic right there, and we can go into that. But
I don't want to get too in depth in
but
that.
Yeah, so the idea of theosis and exaltation is that we all achieve somewhere. All ultimately get to the highest plane of existence.
Right. What was the guy? Saint Ignatius, I think it was, that said, "God became man, so man could become God."
Yeah, I can't attribute that quote to him, but.
It was something along those lines. It was one of the saints of the early church. And so I could have the name wrong. I get all those guys confused. I always thought their first name was Saint. I didn't even realize that was a title.
But, you know, I have to say this much I've been excited for. You know, I've interviewed some people on my podcast that I know much more than I do. And Vin Armani, Cyprian, now as he's called, is one of those people that I got to have my podcast sometime because I just want to have a conversation with him. But I will say that although I don't agree everything dogmatically as he does, I think he's on the right track. I think he's identifying something that's going on in a world that makes a lot of sense based on my own understanding. He was talking about this concept called building the ark, right?
Yeah.
And he talks about how people are, he's, I don't know if you saw his latest, he had like a half hour little talk about what build the ark means. And he talks about how people are now becoming ideologically possessed. Right. Yeah. And so in our modern vernacular, we call it, you know, the word NPC, non-player character, right?
Right. Yeah.
So this concept that people are just living through the world without actually thinking about anything, they're just like kind of programmed. So they're going to recite the same lines when it comes to COVID, right? We're going to talk about the vaccinations. We're going to talk about how you need to, you know, take the shots despite whether they work or not. We just got to do this, right? And so when people argue about this stuff, they just, they kind of recite this programming that's just been given to them without putting any thought into it.
Right.
And so this ideological possession is what Vin's talking about. It's this, I talk about it in a spiritual sense, that there is a demonic spirit that's kind of taken over people's thought process. They're not even on any path. They're just kind of going with the program without even like thinking about why they think this stuff.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it was Jung. I think Jung said that whenever you argue with somebody who's ideologically possessed, so to speak, you're arguing, you leave the realm of knowledge and enter the realm of concept. And I think it was Jung. It might have been somebody else. I don't know. I could be wrong. I read so much stuff and I'm like, I remember a lot of it, but I don't remember who said it. So anybody can feel free to inform me of how wrong I was by attributing that to Jung if I am wrong. But yeah, so it's like, it's this whole idea that, well, and it goes back to kind of like that idea of like angels are messages. Like the message itself is from an angel, like, right? So yeah, you're what you're saying makes sense. It's a possession. You're being possessed by something. Now, I don't know if it would be, I don't know if this would be like the common understanding of what possession is, but I get what you're saying. Cause you're like, I don't remember who it was that said, but like, you know, thoughts don't have, people don't have thoughts. Thoughts have people, you know, kind of like you're possessed by these ideas, by these, it's almost like a spirit. It's almost like an embodiment. I know Carl Jung believed like the parts of your psyche were autonomous beings within you, like your shadow or your id. These were, you know, autonomous beings that lived within you. And that's why, like, when you get angry, you turn into another person and you wake up the next day and you're like, oh my God, like, who was that? You know, like, it's like another autonomous being has taken, you know, possession of your body. And that creating that unified self is learning how to master these autonomous beings of your subconscious and have them intermingle with your conscious regularly so that you can become, as I think as Carl Jung would probably say, you would become more Christ-like in your way of life by mastering your shadow and mastering your id. And then you become the perfect self, which would be the Christ, you know? And this is what you see monks attempting to accomplish, and you know, it's this whole self-mastery thing. And but you have to, you know, Jordan Peterson had spent a lot of time, and one of the things that like really attracted me to Jordan Peterson was the amount of time he spent talking about, if you don't think that you are capable of the worst atrocities mankind has ever committed, then you are dangerous. Right? You have to be aware of your potential for evil, for violence, and being aware of your potential for violence and coming to terms with the idea that, yes, I could have been Goebbels or whatever. I very well could psychologically be put in a place that is that desperate to commit those atrocities on people, that when you come to that realization, then you can start monitoring what it is that would put you there. And by monitoring what it is that would put you there, you can tame that beast that lives within you, that lives within all of us. But if you just reject the notion out of hand, that, oh no, those were just evil people. Well, okay, they were just people. They were babies at one time. They were, you know, nursing at one time. They were, you know, they were growing up. They were learning. They were educated at one time. They were just people. So, like, you have to understand that people have these capabilities, and you are a person with these capabilities. And by understanding that you are a person that has this evil within you that could manifest itself in reality, if you do not keep control of yourself, then if you're unable to acknowledge that, then you're dangerous, because you could possibly lose control and be one of these evil people.
Right. And that's why Jordan Peterson said that a harmless man is not a good man, but a good man is a very dangerous man who voluntarily keeps that under control.
Right. Someone who truly understands, like, what that is, that that's inside them. And that's why, yeah, that's exactly what he means by that. I know a lot of people, like, kind of misconstrue that, but no, a good man is somebody who faces that darkness within, learns what that darkness is, and controls that darkness, and understands the telltale signs of when it may manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes some, sometimes it takes some serious mistakes to find out what that is, you know?
Right. And again, going back to where we started, I think that, because that reality exists, we have men who are tempted by good and evil, and we have the potentially to go off the path, to go towards evil.
Mm.
Right. And following a higher authority, I'll call it, for what I believe, following a Christ, right? Following a Savior, kind of keeps me in line to realize, okay, I'm falling off the track. I don't want to go down that path of being dangerous and violent and react to stimulus in a negative way. I want to be able to, to be more stoic, right? To be able to control my feelings, control my thoughts voluntarily. But I need some kind of source to point that, because I don't, you know, if you don't have that higher authority, that higher power, what is going to lead you to, in that direction?
Right. Yes, absolutely. Well, and okay, so I want to wrap up here in just a minute, but I said I had something that I've been working on in my head, and this is not fully formed. This is something that I've been flirting with for probably a week now. Jordan Peterson brought up a physicist, and I remembered hearing about this before, but it didn't strike me as important a few years ago as it did here recently. He brought up this physicist who did this study, and I read this study, and it's a study on stars and the cosmos and photons and the existence of photons. So, like, what this physicist found is that if you have photon detectors behind a microscope, then a photon will leave a star and travel a specific path and only enter into that detector. And it will not be detected anywhere else on a film, on a film strip. But if you remove these detectors, and you can have two different microscopes or three different microscopes with multiple detectors under each individual microscope, and they will all attract specific photons of light that will only travel that path of light, right? And they will only travel to those detectors. But if you remove the detectors, it hits and you leave the microscopes pointed at the star, the light will hit that film in waves, and it won't be centralized. It won't be pinpointed. And so what I'm working with here, and my limited science knowledge, as you can tell by the way I described that, is that morality, that archetype, that God, whatever, that collective subconscious only exists if there are people focused on it, looking at it, and relaying it and being conductors for that energy. And so you need the desire, the people kind of now having these conversations are those detectors, are those photon detectors trying to grab a hold of the quote unquote light. You know, I am the way, the truth, and the light. Sorry. That was out of nowhere. So you need those detectors to attract that light. And the only way to spread that light, whatever that light may be, whatever you call it, however it manifests itself within society, is only visible if those detectors, because otherwise it manifests itself as a flood, as chaos. It comes through in waves. It comes through, you know, as the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? It comes through as the Soviet regime or Nazi Germany, right? Complete and utter chaos and madness. And that's kind of like the idea I'm working with, you know, here recently. I've just been kind of like flirting with and kind of struggling with here over the last couple of weeks. So what do you make anything of that, or am I just speaking gibberish?
What I was thinking about when you were talking was, are you familiar with the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill?
Yes.
So it's been a while since I read that, but he talked about this concept called auto-suggestion. Okay, which basically means you're going to get up and you're going to read your goals and you're going to manifest this stuff. You know, it's all, you know, like the movie The Secret, right? Which you think about will eventually manifest. Mm-hmm. And so when I first read that, to correlate with what you're talking about, because I am a believer in a higher power, Napoleon Hill talked about how prayer works. Every single individual is like a radio antenna. So when you pray, the thought that is in your head or the thought that you're trying to get out into the world is going to travel like a radio wave in waves. And so it's going to go to heaven, but then that revelation will come back to you the same way. And so everybody can receive it, just like in your photon experiment. Even though you can't tell the photons are there, they're still there, right? The electromagnetic spectrum proves that they're there. We just need certain tools to detect them. Mm-hmm. So if a person doesn't know how to receive revelation from God or doesn't know how to pray properly, well, then what did God do to help us with that, right? And that's where the scriptures, it says that God gave us preachers and pastors and evangelists and prophets and stuff like that. So that's what I was kind of talking before. So those are things that God has put into this world, these clues to receive the messages that he wants to give everybody individually, so we can learn how to become that tool ourselves. So we can receive and detect those photons ourselves. So one of the big misconceptions is that science and religion are opposites. I don't believe that at all. I believe they're exactly the same thing. They're just spoken in different words. So to receive these photons, to detect them, we got to understand what they are. And if we don't understand how to receive them, then it will result in chaos. That's why we're able to be, you know, tempted by different things that are ultimately going to destroy us. So we literally have to be able to be taught how to pray. We have to be taught how to receive messages. We have to be taught how to receive the truth, just like the same way that your photon receptor will actually hone in on those particles, right?
Right.
Einstein said everything exists in waveform. And so you have, you know, we have solids, liquids, and gases, right? Everything is a wave, and just depending on how close the particles are as to what, you know, whether that's going to be a solid, a liquid, or a gas, or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think that you have a basic understanding scientifically, but maybe just the vernacular between what you're saying, what I'm saying, and that's just the only misunderstanding. People, mm-hmm. See, I believe that reality exists. I believe that truth exists. I believe that there is God. What people call that God, okay, well, that's on them. Maybe they haven't gotten the right people teaching them what that is. So they'll come up with this concept called science, right? Capital S, trademark, right? But I think it's the same thing. There is no division between science and religion. It's the same thing, but we just got to understand, okay, I understand this scientifically versus I understand this religiously, but it's the same thing.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And that just, it made me think of the other part of that experiment that I found that was so intriguing and it blew my mind. And I could not stop talking about it the other night. And I was just like, I was talking to my wife and I was just like, wait, hold on. Like, that star that you see in the sky burned out 30 million years ago or 30 billion years ago or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Yet you're seeing it today. So it exists then and now at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they say it burned out, but did it ever burn out? When is the last time a constellation has ever changed? So does it ever burn out, or is it just transcendent of time? And therefore we can't understand what it actually is doing.
Well, I think you're onto something right there, which is the great mystery of life, right? You know, everything exists. Time exists only in the construct of human beings. And so I love these people who talk about science, about what happened on Earth, you know, millions of years ago. It's like, how do you know that? They have a scientific, you know, concept of evolution, right? They have a scientific theory of this. But then you look at radioactive carbon dating and it only is proven up to, you know, 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, how does a human being describe time? Mm-hmm. Well, you can't, right? You might have heard this on the Lord of Spirits when they were talking about how we can't understand what it's like to be a bat.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. As
a human being, I only know what it's like to be me. I can't even understand what it's like to be Tommy, even though I might get to know you more and more every time I talk to you. But I'll never understand what it's like to be you, let alone what it's like to be a bat or a dog. Or how am I supposed to know what it's like to be an angel, what it's like to be a god? You know, science is going to continue to look for answers, and they're just going to fill in the unknowns with whatever they think. But time and existence, it transcends all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite part of that conversation about you don't know what it's like to be a bat is when they say, and you don't know what it's like to be your spouse. And it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Pay more attention. Pay more fucking attention. You know?
So.
Ask more questions. But
that's it.
This was a lot of fun, man. I don't know what I'm going to title this episode, but this was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out things in a world just like you are, Tommy. And, you know, I've been blessed with many good people who have guided me to certain places, and I've had my experiences that I regret. But if you don't have a few regrets in your life, you know, then what is life really?
Have you ever lived?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you live, bro?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, these people nowadays, going back to COVID and everything like that, it's like they're afraid to live. They're afraid of risk. They're possessed by this idea that we want to preserve life, but yet, what is life? What is life if they're going to lock themselves in their houses? They're going to cover their faces and shut themselves off from understanding things in the world.
Right. Yeah. That's no way to live.
I want to thank everyone who stuck around to the very end. And of course, for Tommy for letting me on his show. As we move forward and I'm able to develop a better routine for these shows and get better guests, I will continue to share new ideas, new money-saving tips, and hopefully new affiliates and products for those who are interested. I feel somewhat reluctant to ask people to donate money to me, even though I know that's how many podcasters are able to monetize their shows. I would rather offer something of value instead of me just talking and you throw money my way. But someday soon I will have a new website to check out. And until then, you can find me once again on Twitter, on Facebook, as well as a few other social media sites. That's it. Thanks again. See you all soon.